What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo. Hey guys, it's Friday. Happy Friday. I hope your week truly has been a great one. And I hope you got something good planned for this weekend. And like every Friday, our job is to keep you at the top of your clinical edge. Something to think about to help you think better about your schedule, your procedures, and how you take care of your patients. And I have a new friend. His name is Dr. Jaron Argyle. He's got a unique perspective on how to think better about your clinical days, how to enjoy dentistry, and how to find something called your unique ability. And he shares those thoughts today on the podcast. So please listen up. I hope you guys enjoy this, and I hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. You know the jam around here. I get to meet the coolest people in the industry. Experts, thought leaders, navigators, people that make big changes. And they get to share their story and insights with all of us to help us create a better practice, better life. And I've got a new friend on the podcast today. And he's got a very interesting journey that I think you're going to want to hear. His name is Dr. Jaron Argyle. Jaron, thanks for being here, brother. Appreciate it.
Kirk, I appreciate you. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So great to be here. Now, we're going to be talking about how dentists often get misled on this journey and how you found your way and some of the things that you challenge dentists with. But I do want to start here. I always like to start here as just a little bit of background on who you are, because we have a lot of young students listening. We even have pre-dental students listening. So like, they're going to want to know who are you? Give us a little bio on who you are.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. So I'm a general dentist. I do emphasize treatment of TMJ and sleep apnea treatment, but still do all of the regular bread and butter dentistry procedures with the exception of some minor ones. Don't do any endo. I let go of root canals a little bit, and we'll get into that a little bit, why I did that and what that's done for my life. But grew up in the state of Utah, lived up in the Seattle area for a couple of years doing some missionary work up there. Actually had a great opportunity to work with Cambodian individuals. So if you notice in my background, I've got Angkor Wat, which is one of the big temples out in Cambodia. So I speak Cambodian, speak Vietnamese, speak a little bit of Thai. I like to act like I speak a little Spanish, but that really isn't much at all. My wife thinks I speak Spanish because I can say a couple of phrases, but grew up in Utah for the most part, went to dental school out at the University of Connecticut, go Huskies, big awesome. Huskies fan, at least come basketball season, football season. There's not a lot to root for out there. Came back to Utah immediately after graduated in 2005 and purchased a practice while I was in my senior year of school, lined everything up. And graduated May 15th, started my practice June 15th, went from, it was a complete transition. There was no mentoring. Again, we'll get into that as well. The benefit of a mentor, which I didn't have when I came out because I came in, bought a practice, and the dentist that was there was gone the day I came in. And so as a new graduate, that was quite the learning experience for me. A lot of good things that came from that, a couple little minor hiccups along the road, as you can imagine, having very little business experience. I could have used ACT Dental back in those days for sure. Would have expedited a lot of things along the way. Been in that practice for 20 years. I consider it a lifestyle practice. It's something that I created to serve me and to serve the patients. rather than for me to be a slave of the practice. And we'll talk some things about that, just because I think that's where a lot of us as dentists get ourselves in trouble, and a lot of the things that can cause issues as far as a lot of the statistics that we see with dentists. Have two children, a 25-year-old son and a 22-year-old daughter who is married. My son is not married. My daughter's actually having a child in July. So I don't know when this will air, but here a little bit shortly after it, I'll probably be a grandpa for the first time. So I'm excited about that. Really jazzed and excited to have that happen in life. Definitely interesting to see your own child pregnant with child, and to realize that I'm going to be taking on a new role there. But empty nester, wonderful, beautiful wife named Natalie. We've been married for, it'll be 27 years this August. And just have a great life. Love doing dentistry. Love the business that I've created, the Elevated Dentist. We'll talk a little bit about that and what role that serves for dentists. But just really enjoy life. You and I were talking before we got on air just about the simpleness that life can have. And I think a lot of times, especially with as many things that we have at our fingertips, it's hard to maintain that simplicity.
Yeah. So, Jaron, first of all, congratulations on the grandchild. That's going to be so cool. But let our listeners know, like, it wasn't always the case. This wasn't an easy path for you to say these things. And you mentioned before we hit the go button on the destination, but let's talk about your journey and kind of what you learned getting to this point. What were some of the ups and downs for you?
Well, it kind of started in undergrad. I was actually destined to be a surgeon. I wanted to be a surgeon. I was going down the medical route, and my son was born my third year of college. And when my son was born, something flipped, a switch flipped in me. And I just realized, you know, I don't want to have the call schedule the surgeon has. I don't want to have to go to all of the school that a surgeon has. And so I've completed almost 2.5 years, almost 3 years of prerequisites for medical school, and hadn't even thought once about going to dental school. And I had a good buddy who had been accepted to dental school. He was a senior that year. And he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about dentistry?" Never had thought about it once. Get thinking for a sec. I've got two neighbors. One of them is my best buddy. His dad's a dentist. Another neighbor that's a dentist. I think of their lives. I'm like, hey, that wouldn't be a bad gig to get into. Why I'd never thought of it, I'm not quite sure. But went, visited with them, talked with them. And luckily, all my courses I'd already taken counted right towards it. So that spring, instead of taking the MCAT, I took the DAT. Got accepted into school that following fall, well, accepted and then went matriculated the following fall after that, so 2001. Dental school was great, no major issues. Got out into dentistry, and really, as soon as you come out, there's such a push to become more clinically adept. We learn a lot in dental school, but we realize how much we really don't learn in dental school when we start practicing. And so my focus was at becoming a better dentist, learning, improving my hand skill, improving my technique, improving whatever it was that I didn't know to get better at it. And then a couple of years after that, as things become more normal there and feel more comfortable, I realized that I'm a business owner. And, you know, you're doing these little things here and there, but really, you're just focusing on clinical dentistry. You're not really focusing on running an HR department, hiring and firing, being able to lead in your practice. Leadership is a huge thing that we get so little training on, but can make a massive difference in your practice. And I got to a point in my career, and I'd always decided to go into dentistry because of time and money. I wanted to control my schedule. I wanted to have a good income. And so that's how I created my practice, even though it was an existing practice. We managed to never work too many hours. My first 3 years out in my practice, we had 26 hours that we scheduled patients. And then I went and worked a day at another practice. After 3 years, I stopped that. And I've only worked 26 hours in my own practice up until this point. So the practice that I designed, the practice that I've built, has been because of why I came into dentistry. But I can't tell you how many times, Kirk, that I've gone to a continuing education course, or I've talked with a buddy and I've always had this push to do something bigger, to do something more in my practice, to make more money, to be able to do that. And one of the most common phrases you'll hear me say is, I by no means am the wealthiest dentist that you will ever meet, but I'll put myself up against any dentist out there that I'm the happiest and most fulfilled. And that's my journey. There were some hiccups along the road. There were some difficult things. We talk about suicide in the dental profession. There was a point in my life that, because of not having balance and really not having anything to do with dentistry, I was happy in my practice, but more with personal things. I had such a lack of balance in my personal life that I'd gotten to that point. I'd gotten to a point where I was ready to be done. And it's not a good place to be. And I know that there's a lot of dentists out there that entertain the idea of it. The amazing thing is there's amazing helps. There's amazing things to be able to, but what happens is dentists is we tend to isolate ourselves, especially solo practitioners, which I was.
Yeah.
But even within group practices, we tend to take on everything ourselves, and we feel that we can handle all of it. We don't need help from other people. That's the way most of us are wired. And unfortunately, whether that leads down to a road of potential suicide or suicidal ideations, or if it leads down just to depression and anxiety and the different difficulties, or if it just leads to us being burned out and not really knowing where to go, it can be a tough thing for dentists. And that's why I'm doing other things besides general dentistry now, so that I can help dentists prevent from going to that place.
Yeah, and this is a big passion of yours, and I just appreciate you so much being on. And we're going to break some of this apart. And one of the things you mentioned before we hit the go button is the destination challenge. Like, can you speak to that? Like, dentists don't really have a destination, but dig deep into that.
Yeah, you betcha. So there's a couple of quotes that I absolutely love that relate to this. One's by Thomas Merton. He was a French born, but moved to America right after his birth. He became a monk and he was a writer. And one of the things he says is, people may spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success. As dentists, we're high achievers. We want to succeed and we will succeed. But we climb this ladder of success only to find, once we reach the top, that the ladder's leaning against the wrong wall. And I think people can think of that in two ways. They can think of that as, okay, I never should have came in dentistry, or I've amassed and created this massive practice, this practice that is successful, but it doesn't serve me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't allow me to have the things that I wanted to have in my life when I originally applied to dental school, when I came out of dental school. And part of that, and the main reason for that, is kind of similar to my story. We get so worried about becoming clinically adept, being able to be proficient, because we're hounded on it in dental school. I mean, you look at the ways that we're graded, you look at the preps, whether it's an MOD prep on your typodont, or whether it's when you're bringing your patient to one of your preceptors, we're held to a very high standard of perfection. And that's how we live our life a lot of times. And so we come out of dental school and we really focus on becoming more clinically proficient. And we forget about everything else in our lives.
Yeah.
And ultimately that leads us to the wrong destination. And I don't think that the industry helps. I don't think as a whole, at least my experience, and maybe other dentists have had other experiences, but if you're not growing, you're dying.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. If you don't have more new patients this year than you did last year, you're in trouble. If your hygiene recall percentage isn't increasing compared to where it was last year, if your production numbers aren't higher than they were last year, and we get that beat into us, and so that's the direction we go. And that works for some people. For some dentists, that's great. Some dentists, they want to amass this massive practice that just is bursting at the seams. But other dentists, that doesn't work.
Right.
We hear all sorts of bad things about DSOs. I think there's a place for DSOs. I think there's a great place for DSOs because there's some dentists that never have any business owning a dental practice. And they belong in a situation where they're an employee at a DSO. And so trying to, and I would love if dental schools spent more time on this.
Right.
And again, it's one of those things you have to kind of get out and experience to really know if you wanted to be a practice owner, to be able to experience those things. But if you don't like to lead, if you don't like to help others improve and grow inside of your practice, that's a tough thing. And if you're a business owner, you're going to have a hard time having that business succeed in the true definition of success. I think our definition of success is a little squampus, if you will. I think there's a lot of different ways to measure success besides money.
Yeah, 100%. I have so many questions on what you've said already. You know, the destination, would you agree? It's hard. Like even I thought I wanted this big, massive, cool, exciting thing. And the more I got to know myself, I was like, no, I like quiet. So it took me a little while to do that. And then I know you're going to talk about mentors, but an important one on my journey was a guy by the name of Dan Sullivan. And Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach used to say, the happiest people I've ever met often live the simplest lives. They have, and he was a big fan of what was labeled simplicity, which I know you're a fan of too. So I started the journey for simplicity, and he said simplicity wasn't easy, a lot of the things, but there's a path to that. Now, I think for anybody listening, they can relate. Like, I don't really know, you know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know. So you got to try a few things. And you also mentioned like this narrative is very strong, like growing production, like more. Talk about that. I've said on the podcast many times, I only have the biggest problem with dentistry is the amount of information. There's so much, and you don't even know to who to listen to. You know, you think this guy's great, that woman's great. Like, who do I listen to in this? What would you say to all that?
I agree 100% that the problem isn't that we don't have information. It's almost that we have too much information.
Right.
And living in the United States of America, we're a very capitalistic society. And I love that we are that because I think it's what's made us such an amazing country. And it's what's brought so many amazing things to our fingertips. But I mean, one of the best examples of this that I had is my wife and I, for our 25th wedding anniversary, we went over to Europe. We went with another couple, and I remember we were in Paris and we wanted to go to a crêperie. Well, I didn't want to go to like a chain crêperie that was just going to be, I wanted the experience.
Yeah.
So we're on, I can't remember if we're on Yelp or if we're looking it up on our maps on our phone and trying to find a place. And we finally find one that's kind of in this back area in a neighborhood. The problem is it was open for 2 hours during the day. So we had to schedule our day to be able to go in there. We went on out to Italy on that trip also. And I remember sitting there and you sit and sit and sit until you ask for your check. They never come and ask you for your check. And the mentality that they have over there is to serve the people, to create an amazing experience for the diner. And it's not, okay, how many hours can I have this open because I have to pay rent at a certain rate and I need to maximize my profitability and my income that I can make from here. And so I think it's so important for each of us because whether you're in dentistry or whatever field you're in, if you're in the United States of America, it's all about growth. And I am not an anti-growth person by any means. I love growth, especially personal growth. And I love growth in my practice, but we don't always measure it by the numbers, by money. We measure it by happiness of team members. We measure it by happiness of patients. We measure it by how well we feel that we served our patients. Now, don't get me wrong, we're still going to be profitable when we do that. We're not doing free dentistry for our patients. I do free dentistry, but I don't do that in my clinic. I go and I donate my time in clinics around me so that I don't have to worry about having an overhead that's associated with that. But there's so much that we can do to measure growth and measure success in a different way than what our minds go to from a default standpoint.
Yeah. So let me be the listener who's a dentist who's maybe 32, Jared, and I'm struggling. I got this practice. I don't know if I love it. It just seems like a lot. I post a question in the Facebook chat with all my 30,000 friends. I get different opinions. I don't know who to believe. I got a buddy who's crazy successful. He's got six dentists that's worked for him. I got another buddy. He does it all by himself. Like, I don't know what to believe. Like, where would you start with me? I got little kids too. Like, I just feel like I'm working all the time. I mean, you said that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one of my favorite authors, and he's actually an amazing individual. His name's Dr. James Doty. And he is out at Stanford. He's a neurosurgeon. And he's got the perfect hero's journey because he amassed this massive wealth, 75 million net worth. And in a matter of days, he was bankrupt. And what got him to that wealth was the same thing that was able to help him recreate that wealth. But wealth meaning not just rich in money, but wealth in life.
Right.
And he says that one of the biggest things, and he has a book, it's called Into the Magic Shop. It's basically his life story. And we don't have time to go through the whole thing, but one of the things that he said in there is, and this is so true for dentists, the head is powerful. Our minds, and dentists especially, we're smart people. We would never have gotten into dental school had we not been smart. The head is powerful, but it can only get us what we really want if we open our heart first. Another great quote from Gay Hendricks, and he's an author, organizational psychologist, another just great mind. He said, your mind can conceive of a magnificent positive future for you, but your heart is what will make it real. And what I'd say to that 32-year-old dentist struggling in their practice, having young kids at home, probably a mountain of debt from dental school, we have to make money.
Right.
There's no question about that. So we have to have a game plan that's going to make money, but we have to find what our heart desires. And to do that, that is one of the things that we work with clients with, is to help them to understand where that heart-mind alignment is at. Because our minds are going to go by default to make more money, make more money, make more money. Because our environment conditions us to that. Our circumstances condition us to that because we need the money. Because all of the dentists around us are driving very nice cars. They've got a nice practice. It's state of the art. Ours is a little bit older. We compare a lot in dentistry. And the first thing I'd say is stop comparing. Stop worrying about what the other dentists around you are doing.
Right.
And start collaborating. Talk with them. Ask them. Say, hey, you've got this practice. Don't be shy. Do you love it? Do you not love it? Because you'll find some of those dentists that are just cranking in the money. A lot of them are the ones that are not real happy, unfortunately, but they've got plenty of money.
Right. And that's an important point too. Like, you got to get around other people, and they got to be the right type of people, the right type of dentist. And so the isolation theme is huge in dentistry. That's why there's great study clubs, like there's great coaching programs. And I get it. Like, people are busy. Everyone's busy. You know what I mean? So I think finding that time to be around mentors, I actually don't have a clue to where I'd be if I didn't reach out to mentors or work with some coaches, people that were invested in you. But again,
Kirk, I spent my first half of my career not working with mentors. And I can tell you right now, it is not a good way to go.
Right.
I had that isolated mentality, and it's amazing the amount of growth personal and profitable that I've had since working with other mentors within and without and outside of the field of dentistry.
Yeah, I would completely agree. They say that self-talk, 80% of it is negative. So you don't want to be talking to yourself. You should be talking to somebody else for the most part, you know, and somebody who's invested in helping you create the future. Now, one of the things that you are big on is like, once you pick a destination, like figuring out how to get there. Let's talk. And then the last piece of it, we can intertwine both of these, is like, once you get there, you got to learn how to enjoy it. Let's talk about the first piece. Let's say I'm the dentist listening and I'm like, I'm just going to start charting a course, maybe do a practice like yours, 26 hours a week. I mean, give me some realistic expectations. This isn't a 1 year journey. This isn't a 2 year journey. This is a lifelong journey. Don't you think?
It is. It's a lifelong journey. And not only is it a lifelong journey, it's probably going to change.
Right.
You'll notice that that goalpost you have set out ahead of you, it will change. And something we need to understand is that's okay. We will find things that we like. We'll find things that we don't like. Humankind as a whole has a very difficult time once they've sunk some time, sunk some money into something, to let it go if it's not the right thing. They call that sunk cost bias. And it's so common that once we've invested our time or our money into something, we feel like we've got to just push through with it. And whether that's with a perfect example is a dental procedure. Say I go and invest $10,000, $20,000 in courses to learn how to place implants. I'd buy an implant motor. I'd get into a contract with an implant company. Say we do a $10,000, $20,000 contract with this implant company. And I start doing them. I get a year, 2 years into it, and I absolutely hate it. Well, I can't stop doing it because I've invested all this money into it. I can't stop doing it because it's generating revenue for me.
Right.
But I'm miserable. And that is, whether it's implants, whether it's ortho, whether it's root canals, whatever the procedure is. I did root canals. I did endo for the longest time because I was told it was the most profitable procedure in dentistry. This was before GentleWave and microscopes and all of that stuff. I don't know if that's still true anymore with all of those advents, but I was miserable. I was the dentist who took a look at the x-ray and said, okay, this is going to be an easy one. I'll do this one. Okay, this is going to be a hard one. We'll send this one off to the endodontist. And what I started to realize is I was horrible at figuring out which ones were easy ones and which ones were hard ones. And the day that my rotary handpiece broke on me, and I sat down and I started researching, okay, what handpiece do I need to get? We need to get a new one. It dawned on me. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? If this isn't a sign, I don't know what it is. I'm right. Done doing endo. I'm not buying another rotary handpiece. I'll keep a couple of files in case I've got to do something real quick, like a pulpotomy or something to get someone out of pain. And I'll tell you what, this was at a time in my practice that we weren't that busy. I had open chair time. And that was not an easy decision because I was taking myself from being partially busy to even less busy. But because of that choice, I can't even explain the amount of peace, happiness, joy that came from that, because I wasn't doing a procedure that just did not jive with me.
That's awesome. And so, again, one of the things is, as you start to go on this journey, whether it be, you know, big steps or small steps, you start to experience success. One of the biggest pieces that I think everybody has, not just dentists, is like, how do I enjoy my life that I'm creating? You know, once you start to get there or get glimpses of getting there. Now, this is a big, big deal. And you mentioned this before we hit the go button, but I'd love for you to talk about why this is such an important topic for you, helping dentists enjoy the ride.
So one of the things that I've found most beneficial in my life to help out in this, to get right to the nuts and bolts of how this is done, is you mentioned Dan Sullivan earlier. He's a mentor of mine. I've been involved in his strategic coaching program. One of the core concepts of his coaching program is unique ability. And what the definition of unique ability is something that you have superior skill in. So you're just as good, if not better than others in it. It's going to provide you with energy. You have a passion for it, and you can get paid for it.
Yep.
So it's interesting too, because Gay Hendricks, who I mentioned earlier, he talks about the exact same concept, but he calls it the zone of genius. Others have called it flow state. But what happens when we are operating or functioning in our unique ability is it allows us to be fueled. It allows us to have energy where you have passion towards it. And so if you can find the things inside of dentistry, and again, it's trial and error, it's trying things, and really it's paying attention to the happiness those procedures bring you. Because you will find a lot of times we just kind of numb ourselves to it. We just get in our mind. It's like, I'm a dentist. I got to do this. Here we go. Boom, 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 boom. But if we actually take a little bit of time to think about how our day went, what procedures we did, what procedures went well, what procedures didn't go well, which procedures we enjoyed, and then we focus more on that, we'll be able to start moving in that direction, start pointing that needle in the way that it needs to go. And ultimately what that'll do is it's going to cause you to not specialize, but limit your practice. But guess what? The beauty of that is you're going to find other dentists in your community that love doing those things that you hate.
Right.
Or a specialist. I mean, another perfect example, and I almost feel ashamed to say this, I hate doing cosmetic dentistry. Well, guess what my sign on the front of my building says? Family and cosmetic dentist. That's not serving me well.
Right.
Because I don't enjoy doing the type of cosmetic dentistry that most people want. If you've got a tooth number 8 that's broken in half and you just want it to look good, I'll do that all day long. If you've got a perfect smile and you want a set of veneers from tooth number 4 to tooth number 13, I hate that. I get so much anxiety just, and I don't do it often enough to feel like I'm as good at it as other individuals that I know. And so I literally sent out probably a $20,000 case the other day to a dentist down the road, another general dentist, because I know he loves doing cosmetic dentistry and I know he does a good job at doing it. And so the more each of us can function in our unique ability or in our zone of genius, the more happiness we're going to have. And we'll have the work. You might take a hit initially. Would I rather have that $20,000 coming to me? Yes. And even as well as I've done this throughout my life, it was still a hard decision.
Yeah.
I told my office manager, I said, don't let me do these types of cases because they cause me too much stress. They cause me too much anxiety. But you know, other dentists, they've got the technique down. They've got it figured out. And so that is their zone of genius. That is it. And we'll find if you can hone in and figure out what your unique abilities are. And Dan puts it into 4 different categories. He talks about a zone of incompetence, a zone of competence, a zone of excellence, and a zone of unique ability.
Yep.
And that zone of excellence, zone of incompetence and competence are easy to get rid of because incompetence, you have no business doing. You don't even know how to do it.
Yep.
Zone of competence, you know how to do it. You're pretty good at it, but it causes a lot of problems. That's cosmetic dentistry. That's endo for me. Excellent activities are the golden handcuffs.
Yep.
They're the things that you do really well, but they just don't provide much passion. They don't provide energy for you. And so that's where we see a lot of burnout, a lot of overwhelm and exhaustion in dentistry itself, is we tend to function more in those excellent categories rather than in the unique abilities or zone of genius.
Yeah, you're talking my language. That unique ability exercise, if you guys are listening, you should just Google it. Unique ability, Dan Sullivan has a workbook. It's Unique Ability 2.0. I still have it in my office off of my bedroom. And I filled it out and I remember taking the course. Now, I don't remember how long ago. It was well over a decade, probably 15 years ago. And I remember Barb working in my office. I flew all the way to Toronto to take the course and I had to do the whole thing. So he made me, back then we had to put it all in the quadrants. And what you're exactly right. Like whatever you put in your unique ability, he's like, there's not 11 things that go here. There's going to be like three. And I'm like, well, I don't know about that. Well, I spent a whole day and I remember telling Barb when I came in, I just did this exercise. She's like, where'd you go? I go, I went to Toronto to do this. And I just found out I sucked at a lot of things. She's like, you had to take a course for that? I could have told you that. But like all of these things that were in the different quadrants, and I remember one of them being QuickBooks, and I could get it right. I actually kind of enjoyed reconciling, but I had to do it. It took me 3 hours and I had to wait until all the kids were in bed and I could get like a week or two right. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't love it and I wasn't consistently good at it. So by doing this exercise, what he teaches you is you start giving away those things. Because Barb's next question was, who's going to do them? And I'm like, I have no idea. I'm not going to do them because I suck at them. I'm not good at them. But his point was exactly what you're saying. The more I stayed in the unique ability, and I'm not there 100%, but the more you do it, the more joy you get. The more feedback you get from others, that's people say, you are really good at it. And it's not really a crazy concept. Jim Collins, it's the flywheel concept. What are you the best at? What can you make money at? What can you have a lot of fun doing? Like a lot of these things. The hardest part is doing the work or having somebody along the journey to say, no, you're not really good at that. Because there are moments where you're like, I'm really good at it. And then people are like, you're terrible at this. And so having people around you to do that. And I do agree. You experience a never ending sense of like growth. You feel like you're better at it. And so anything else you would add? Like, how do I, keep going?
I think it puts you into a flow state. And right. If you just Google flow state, I don't even know how to say the guy's name, Mihail.
To starts with a C.
A professor up at Chicago. He's the one who kind of defined flow state. And it is, we think of it, we look at all of the negative things that could come from it, decrease in revenue, but even amongst our team, like my team, when we stopped doing endo, they all hated it too. And they hated me because of it. And so it just makes everything so much better. But one thing that I'd say is it's doing it. But I think the biggest thing with dentists, one of the biggest things is taking the time to actually figure it out. Right. So often and this isn't dentists alone, this is, again, America as a whole, we are such a busy society. We have got so many things going on. We talked earlier about just the simplicity of things. So often, dentists are so stuck in the weeds that they never get up above them. They never pull back. Take a weekend where you just go with your spouse or you just go by yourself, get a hotel, and dedicate a couple of hours of thinking time for your practice. I do that on a monthly basis. I do it on a quarterly basis, and I do it on an annual basis. And each of them are longer periods of time. The annual one's a multiple day thing. The quarterly thing's just an afternoon type thing. And the monthly thing is just usually a couple of consolidated hours. But I look back and I see, was I happy this last month? Did I get fulfillment out of what I did this last month? And if not, why not? And what do I need to do to tweak that? And how can I make that work within my life and within my practice?
Yeah. So good. Jaron, I have so many other questions. I could keep you on here for another hour. But I would love to do this. I know people are going to want to know more about you and how do they find out more about what you do. I'd love for you to send them there. But before we do, give us some final thoughts on this entire topic.
I guess in closing, what I'd like to share is just it's time to do something different. We as a dental profession, statistically, our statistics are horrible when it comes to anxiety, depression, stress. It was interesting. I just got an email from the American Dental Association's president, Brett Kessler. And if you know his story, he has come from a really rough situation where he had a lot of alcohol use and really got down to the dumps and has come back and is a huge advocate for health and wellness. And I think we really need to pay more attention to that and be able to understand we are in it's a difficult profession. There's no question about it. We're working in millimeters and tenths of millimeters, such minor increments. We're in a mouth that the patient's moving. Our face is literally 12, 16 inches away from their face, and we experience everything they're experiencing. And we take that in. We don't have a very good release. There was a study, well, a survey that the American Dental Association sent out in 2021, and they found that 75% of dentists experience moderate to high levels of stress. 54% have high, medium to high levels of depression. In this email that Dr. Kessler just sent out the other day, they had done a study, another survey, and they found that 82% experience major stress relating to their profession. Up from 75% just a couple of years before. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, that's COVID. And all the, well, guess what? It hasn't changed. It's increased.
Right.
We have the well-being index that we have access to in the field of dentistry that the Mayo Clinic has put together. We are the second highest level of healthcare professionals that experience distress or struggling. Nurses are higher than we are. But there's so much that we need to do to be able to take care of ourselves. And one of the biggest things, besides what we've already talked about, in finding what you truly enjoy and figuring out a way to be able to have more of that in your practice, find out the way that you want to practice dentistry. Do you want to be in a group setting? Do you want to be in a DSO? Do you want to have your own practice? Figure that out. Talk with your colleagues. We don't talk with one another. We look at each other as competition instead of collaborating with one another. And finally, one thing we didn't really talk about is just how do we recover and do we recover? There were two scientists, German organizational psychologists, that did some work back in the 2005 to 2015, and they found that there were four ways that we can recover. And the most important, the most critical one of those was psychological detachment from our occupation. Being able to get away and mentally get away from our practice. I think so often, especially as practice owners, we never get away from our practice, not meaning physically, but mentally.
Right.
It's always in the back of our head. We're constantly thinking of issues, things that we need to change, improvements, troubles that are going on. So find a way that you can psychologically detach. Another one of the four ways they say you can recover is relaxation. We don't do it in the world of dentistry. We're a go, go, go society. And so often we don't sit down and relax because we're high achievers. We want to be able to always be accomplishing something. It's okay to sit down and read a book that has nothing to do with dentistry. It doesn't have to be a journal article. It's okay to read. In fact, not only is it okay, it's very healing, and it's going to make you even a better dentist, even better than reading that journal article on whatever bacteria or whatever procedure that you're learning on. Another concept with the recovery is mastery. We love being able to improve on something. And the final thing they talk about is control, being able to make that choice ourselves. Those four things, for me, it's mountain biking.
Yeah.
Mountain biking is my drug of choice. It allows me to completely psychologically detach from work. It allows me to relax sometimes. Other times it's not so relaxing because I'm climbing up a hill. I get better and better at it every time I do it. and I'm the one who gets to choose that I'm going to do it or not. Find something. So many of us, when we get into dental school, we lose all of our hobbies.
Yeah.
If we didn't lose them in dental school, we pretty much have lost them once we've become a dentist. And if we haven't, as soon as we become a dentist, 10 years in, we've almost always lost those hobbies. Find something that allows you to get away from dentistry, because I'll promise you that if you do that, you will have so much more success in dentistry, because you'll be that much more capable. We as dentists will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on equipment or on different courses to take. But how much money do we spend investing in ourselves? And if you think about our practice, what is the most important cog in that machine? It is us.
Yeah.
Because if we're not functioning properly, if we're not on our A game, nothing else is going to be. And I can guarantee any time that you put towards recovering and put towards your practice, but more so in the way that we've talked about on this, it will come back sevenfold easily. Your return on your investment will be massive, even though when you first think about it, it's like, oh, I'm going to be wasting my time and it's not going to work out.
Right.
I can guarantee you that it will.
So well said, Jaron. So well said. So please, I know, again, a lot of our listeners are going to want to know, how do I find out more about what you do? Where can I go? Tell us where to go.
Easiest place is just go to www.theelevateddentist.com. It's a little tricky because there's two double E's and two double D's.
Yeah.
When I created the company and made the name, I probably should have thought about that better. So theelevateddentist.com, all one word. There's a, one of the first things you'll come across on there is a consultation link. You can learn more about the company there, but easiest thing, get on a consultation call with me, because we'll sit down specific to your situation and be able to help you hone in on some of those unique abilities, or help you be able to realize, okay, what type of practice is it that I really want to have? Or is the setting that I'm in the right setting to be? That's probably the easiest, quickest thing. I can definitely get you my email and contact information that you can put in the show notes and stuff. But just theelevateddentist.com.
Yeah, please do.
Super
I'll put it all in the show notes. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're not taking notes, don't worry. We're taking notes for you. You can flip up to the show notes and you'll see links to everything that we've mentioned. So Jaron, you're doing great work, buddy. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you, and I appreciate the opportunity and the honor to be on your show. I love that you're getting out there and trying to help us become better.
Well, it's the name of the game, isn't it? So awesome. Awesome. We'll stick around when we say goodbye to everybody else, but thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. If you enjoyed that, please do us a favor, hit the share button and share this with your friends. Dentistry is an amazing profession, and we all appreciate hearing great perspectives on how we can enjoy this even more. Make sure you check out Jaron's links. They're going to be in the show notes. Again, you can just go right down to them and click below. But keep in mind, again, this is the greatest profession ever. We're going to keep bringing it so you can create a better practice and a better life. And keep in mind, there's a lot of people out there to help you if you're not enjoying the profession. So keep the faith. So until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it, so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.